Hello and welcome to the Profitable Practice Podcast with me, Andrea Maxim, naturopathic doctor turned healthpreneur. And every week I'm bringing you no nonsense, no BS, actionable strategies to create a practice that is not only profitable, but fully sustainable by you. If you're an action taker like me and want to create a practice that is profitable, then you've come to the right place. Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Profitable Practice Podcast. I am, of course, your host, Andrea Maxim, naturopathic doctor. And today we are going to get down and dirty with that yucky word, money. We're going to be talking about student loans today. And I know a lot of you've got them, and I know a lot of you've got a lot of them. And this can really be a tremendous detriment mentally when it comes to approaching your business the way that you should. So it was my pleasure to bring Travis Hornsby on to talk about all about student loaning and proper planning and financial budgeting, and also talking about, you know, the emotional side of having student loans when it comes to partnerships and, you know, wanting the type of lifestyle that you think that you deserve now that you've graduated from your, you know, healthcare school or college. So this is something that I definitely have been learning and reading a lot about, is my relationship with money. And for a lot of us, it comes with a very negative, scary, you know, I don't even want to look at my bank account. I don't even want to know how much is on my credit card statement. You know, it becomes this kind of, exactly as we talk about later, you know, you just want to put your head in the sand and not even acknowledge the issues that are coming with your finances. And I can tell you that one of the things that I promised myself is, when it comes to money and making investments on me and my business, I always knew that I had the drive to win big. And so for me, I took out immediately a $25,000 business loan when I graduated, and I had $30,000 in OSAP. So that's the Ontario student school loan plan. I can't remember what OSAP stands for. And I always knew that I was going to be able to pay it back. And I can be completely honest with you that it took me a good 3 years before I got that line of credit to go to zero. And then, of course, I found a new investment that I would use my line of credit to help subsidize, and then I would bring it back to zero. And it really wasn't until the past 2 years that I have consistently been in the black in my bank account. And that was just because I had massive dreams and goals for my business that I knew I had to make an upfront investment on. So it was buying a clinic, it was getting a car, it was, because I was traveling between two spaces and they were 40 minutes apart. It was buying expensive equipment for my clinic. It was investing in my self-published book, which was not inexpensive. It was investing in my online presence. And the podcast that I'm doing was still an investment. And the business coaching that I've done was a major investment. But every single time, I knew that I had the tenacity to pay it off. So it was always a worthwhile investment. And this is a number one reason why I never gamble. I never go to the casino with my husband. I refuse to put money even into a lotto ticket or a scratch card because I can't control the outcome. But when it comes to me and my potential, I have full control over that. And so I've, over time, developed a very positive relationship with money, where I always knew, and based on my actions, that I would be able to make that investment back, and my return on investment was always in the plus. But I know that there's a lot of you that don't feel that way. And there's a lot of you that are still feeling very strangled and weighted down by the debt that you've accumulated and maybe what your credit card statement is saying. And of course, the people that are in your life that are expecting you to contribute in some way, shape, or form with regards to the bills, like keeping your family going and all those other things. And so there's a few resources that I think you should look into around this. The number one person that I've been listening to, and I will put a link to the podcast that he did with James Wedmore is Jim Fortin. And I've listened to this podcast two or three times now, and every single time it really does help you, number one, take radical responsibility for where you are now and understand what you need to be responsible for in order to become and live that lifestyle that you want to. And it always comes down to you. And he does talk a lot about the financial side of things, how we can easily let debt dictate our success because we constantly make stories and tell ourselves, well, you know, I'm poor, I have no money. And while the reality of that may be true, what you decide to do in order to overcome that obstacle is completely up to you and your responsibility. So that's Jim Fortin, who I have been following for a number of months now and has really helped me change my perspective on how I am perceiving my life, how I am acting in my life, and who I am being in my life, whether it's finances, as a wife, as a mother, as a business owner. The other book that I've been reading lately is Dollars Flow Easy to Me. And that is something, again, I will post in the show notes. But that's a really great book for you to understand your mental blocks around finances. And the more you block money from coming to you, the less money you're going to have. So it's all about being very comfortable with accepting what you're worth and accepting money from your patients and for supplements and running a business. You need to be profitable to continue to run your business, and just about the mindset around that. So those are the two resources that I would strongly encourage you check out. Again, those will be in the show notes. But before we jump into the podcast, of course, the sponsor for the podcast show is my 7-day detox program. This is a program that I have used basically since, you know, year one in my practice, and to this date, so 6 years later, has still continued to be the most profitable program that I have in my business. If you want to check it out, you can go to maximizebusiness.ca/7-day-detox-program. It is completely done for you. You can implement it in 24 hours, and with my clients and people that buy it, I say implement it with the very next patient. You don't have to have all the emails in place and everything else. Just start running it in your practice. And it is, again, the biggest reason why I get word of mouth referrals, and my patients continuously come back and repeat the 7-day detox completely on their own volition. So it is a really easy program to run, and it's a great way to make some passive revenue as well and some more revenue in your business. So go to maximizedbusiness.ca/7-day-detox-program and download that now. Okay, let's jump into the interview with Travis. Hello, Travis. Thank you so much for being on the Profitable Practice podcast. Just give everybody kind of a bit of a background on who you are and how you got into this particular topic that we're going to be talking about today.
Sure. Well, I started dating this woman, my wife now, and we had this conversation, you know, the money conversation, and she told me, hey, by the way, you know, I have six figures in student loans. And I said, oh, okay, that's interesting. You know, I hadn't had to deal with that in my life until then. And I decided, well, I can help figure this out. Like, I'm a bond trader. I used to, you know, work in kind of like the Wall Street world and everything. And so I'm going to make a model, and I'm going to figure out a plan for us to how to pay this back. And so I thought it was going to be real straightforward. And then I did it, and it was a lot more complicated. So for Americans, there's just all these different repayment plans, and they're always changing, and they've got all these different companies that manage your loans, and they seem to change every, you know, few years or even few months in some cases. And so I just decided, well, this is too complicated. I want to help people figure out how to make a plan to pay back their giant student loans, because it's the number one financial challenge in their life, right? And so I started initially just doing it for friends, and then I decided to make it a full-time business. And now we've consulted on about $240 million or so of student debt since I started this officially back in October 2016. So that's almost real money.
Wow. And just thinking about it, thinking about the finances, like as soon as we start talking money, there's this whole stigma around talking about our finances and looking at our numbers. And if anybody is like my husband, he just doesn't even open his bills half the time. He just like gives them money and says, I hope that this is paying things off, right? So let's first start there, because the biggest mental obstacle that happens is we have these students that are brilliant, they're health-centered and heart-centered, and all they want to do is help people, whether it's nutrition, health coach, naturopath. And especially in the naturopathic realm, you know, they're graduating with, as you mentioned, like six figures in debt. And then the next thing is, well, I need to invest in a business. I need to start making money back. So when you start working with your clients, how do you get over the mental obstacle of facing the reality that is the cash flow, and then get them to move forward beyond that so it's not such a burden?
Yeah, I think that the first thing you got to do is stop looking at the past and saying shoulda, woulda, coulda. You know, it's, you know, anything that's already happened has already happened and you can't change it. So definitely it makes sense to just, you know, think about it briefly, but then you want to figure out what lessons that you can use from that and just move forward with your life. So that's a big problem that I find, is people a lot of times want to put their head in the sand, kind of like an ostrich, you know, it's like, just pretend it's not a problem and maybe it'll go away. Like that's not the way to do it. So I think that you made a great point with people that are just very focused on helping people. They're really passionate about what they're learning and putting it into practice. But you know, a lot of times I think you've got these schools that really kind of take advantage of people and charge people way more than, you know, I'd really like to see people pay in tuition. So the first off is like not blaming yourself, like just giving yourself permission to not feel guilty for all the decisions that you made in your life. That's like the first step, step one. Yeah. And so, I mean, a step two would be a little bit more practical. It's very hard to make a good long-term plan for your student loans if your short-term cash position is really messed up. So a lot of times, like, you know, I'll say, well, okay, do you have credit? How much do you have in the bank? You know, what does your budget look like? And so we'll have discussions just about making sure that that short-term picture is okay. And you have a good relationship with money just in general. And then the next step is figuring out the big student debt and figuring out what to do with that. Because once we've gotten like through those first two steps, it's okay, right? Like we've already destroyed and slayed the sort of blame yourself kind of mentality. And the second step, we've fixed that cycle of living paycheck to paycheck. And once those two things are slain, then we can focus on that third step, which is figuring out the student loan plan.
Right. So before we break that down, because I'm sure everybody wants to hear that part, my initial thought is, okay, so I've forgiven myself, which I'm sure takes a lot more than just saying it. I know what money I have to play with in my bank. The next question is, so I want to start a business. I need at least maybe $10,000 to really get my business up and running. How do you then approach people that need to take out another loan to get things going while they still have this student loan? And again, the mental part of this, as well as planning it all out.
Well, luckily for most naturopaths, at least in the US, you're going to have loans that are on the federal system. So you can pay based on your income. So at a high level, you know, you're paying a fixed percentage of whatever you make. So if you're making zero, your payment's zero, you know, at the extreme case. And if you're making 50,000, maybe your payment's like 300 to 500 a month. And so, you know, it's a limited portion of what you're earning. So that's the first step, is realizing like you don't actually have 300,000 in student loans. You have what's effectively a tax on your income for 20 to 25 years.
I see.
And then, yeah, and then we can go into this more later, but then you have a big tax bomb payment at the end for, you know, when you're done paying back, you know, on these different income-based programs. So it's not a giant amount of debt. It's really like a tax. So now that you've realized that it's kind of like a tax, like pretend that you're in Sweden and taxes are like, you know, 70% or 80%, whatever they are in Sweden, right?
Oh my God, like, I hope not.
I know, but like if you had the opportunity to earn more money, you know, would you do that? And the answer is of course, right? So then that you're going to make more money as a business owner, you know, long term, you know, with a very high probability. Like there are some people that would make more money as an associate, because they're just not, they don't have that business owner mentality.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. Most people, once they get over the confidence issue, will make more money as a business owner. So the question is whether you have to go to a bank to get that financing, or you have to use your savings, or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. You've got to take that next step. So a lot of times what I'll tell folks is, you know, the student loans are a very important piece of it, but you don't want to lose like the forest for the trees. And
right.
Being financially successful with your degree means owning your future and having your own practice.
Yes.
So, yeah. So we'll talk about different ways that they can do that from a practical standpoint. And then focus on this, how the student loan piece fits into that.
Well, if you don't mind, I would actually love to go into that right now. So we're at that place where, you know, let's say I want to open a clinic space. I want to have my own space, maybe not a massive center, but I just want to have my own little space, as you said, start investing in my success as a healthpreneur, a business owner. So how do I start navigating that and planning things appropriately? So again, you know, another big falter that I see is we have this perception when we want to open a space, it has to be massive. It has to like throw as much money into it, make the walls as beautiful as they are, get the most expensive furniture, like have it look perfect right out of the gate. And yet we still haven't even seen one patient yet. So how do you start to navigate around the realism of starting a business?
Yeah, well, I'll blame one of my friends here and tell you how not to do it. So I had a friend who recently, he spent about $40,000 on starting a business. And during that period where he was spending all that money, he maybe had like $2,000 or $3,000 of revenue. So what he was doing was trying to get to the point where he was already, you know, investing in things to scale, but he didn't even have that basic foundation laid yet.
Yeah.
So what I would tell anybody who's starting a naturopath business is you want to keep your fixed costs very low, as low as possible. And that doesn't include just your business, that's your personal life too.
Mm-hmm.
So many people, like, they graduate after all this arduous work and higher education, and they're like, you know what, I'm a doctor, I'm going to go out and I'm going to buy a car, because normal adults with my level of education deserve a car, right? Or a house, or, you know, a trip to the Caribbean or whatever it is. And so that first step is, at least for this period where you're going to experiment having your own business, that stuff has to not exist or be very limited. So you're kind of living like you're in a desperation, poverty mode for those first 2 or 3 years of business, and having that expectation with you and your family that it's going to be really lean. Mm-hmm. You know, you're not going to go out to eat all that much. You're not going to have a big car payment. If you're going to buy a house, you're going to delay that goal. And really making yourself as you know, removing as much stress as possible, mm-hmm. by having low fixed costs. So it's like the personal side of the equation. And then for the business side of the equation, you know, get creative. You know, you don't have to necessarily take out this giant space. Like, start small, you know, undercharge for your services perhaps at first, because, you know, if you charge what an experienced doctor is, you know, maybe people aren't going to come see you right away, mm-hmm. because you're not offering a compelling reason.
Mm-hmm.
So if you give away your services at a lower price point, or you take, you know, you accept more generous, or I should say less generous, plans, you know, from people, then you'll get that revenue in the door. And then once it's coming in the door and you have some level of profitability, even if it's really small, then you can optimize things.
Yeah.
You can say, okay, maybe we don't take this plan because the reimbursement's really low, or maybe we, you know, get a bigger space because we're overflowing on patients and we're working, you know, 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. and that's not sustainable. So those are a couple tips.
Yeah. And I actually want to elaborate on that last one, because I love it. Because this is the other thing is, all new graduates, again, regardless of health field, they just want to make money as quickly as possible, but they don't necessarily negotiate on their calendar. So coming back, what you were saying, I say, you know, you have nobody on the books anyway. Do whatever you can, whether it's offering your services for free, offering a discount, like, just get people into the door, because that also elaborates on the confidence piece. And the faster you can get your confidence level up, the faster you're going to see those changes in your patients, the faster you can start to raise your rates. And all of this starts to snowball much faster. But again, it's sort of like, well, I don't want to charge low rates because I think I'm worth more. And yet your calendar is like bare bones empty. So just get people in the door to at least manifest that flow. and then start to elaborate on things. So I really, really appreciate that. Now, what are some of the, when we're talking about fixed costs, what are some of the cool avenues that are available now with technology and the internet that people can start to use to their advantage? Whereas before, like 10 years ago, you had to pay. For instance, a lot of my colleagues now are using like wireless faxing on their phone. Like they didn't buy a fax machine. A lot of people are using their cell phones as their clinic phone, as opposed to buying a landline. So what other kind of cool techniques have you seen your clients use to pinch a few pennies here and there?
I would say that's a great question. So there's a lot of really expensive healthcare focused software out there mm-hmm. that you're supposed to buy because it's the latest and the greatest and it's compliant with everything. And I mean, I think that you want to go as simple as and effective as possible to the extent that you can. So like I have this amazing calendar feature where people can book and reschedule. It's called Calendly.
Oh yeah.
And, and that's, you know, it's so easy and you don't have to pay, $500 a month for some fancy firm to set mm-hmm. it up and implement it for you. You can pay whatever it is, like 10 or 20 bucks a month. And yeah. Like there's this chatbot thing that I have on my site that it's called Olark, and I put that on my site so when people have questions, like they can just click that button and it's really obvious that you can contact me and, you know, chat. And I think I saw something like that on your site
as well. Yeah, it was totally free. Yeah.
Yeah. And so if you have somebody sitting at the front desk or someone like that, then like absolutely they should be logged into that all day. Like, so if somebody has a question and they happen to be on your site, they can just click that button and ask and get a live answer.
Yeah. Perfect.
So those are some things. If you're in an area that's kind of, not super competitive with a lot of other doctors around, then I would say stuff like Facebook ads, you can target people and mm-hmm. limit it to very small geographic area, and you can do all kinds of things with sending people to booking landing pages and there's all kinds of stuff you can do there. So I think that I'm gonna spend $50,000 and I'm gonna have a successful practice is so totally not true. You probably could get away with just like at least somewhere to practice and then $500 or something like that for various software and you'd be off to the races.
Perfect. So let's say we've got everything in place. We're running things on a fairly shoestring budget. The other thing that comes with finances that I find is the family members, the partners. You know, I've had personal coaching clients and people that have reached out and they're like, my husband or my wife is relying on me to contribute to these bills that we have. My parents were expecting me to be able to pay for such and such things by now, and I'm just not able to. So I wanted to talk to you about the conversation, like the real conversation that perhaps you've witnessed with your clients where they have to break things down and be realistic with their family and friends. And you kind of touched on this earlier, but I'd like to go into a bit more detail about that. And how do you then coach your clients to have that conversation?
Yeah. Well, the first thing to think about is the student loan burden is think of it like a percentage of your income, right? It's a tax. It's not an absolute debt payment. So if you look at $350,000 in student loans, to pay that back in 10 years, you might have to pay $3,500 to $4,000 a month. And that's just not possible.
Right.
You know, I mean, even if you're crushing it as a practice owner and making $100,000 to $150,000 yeah. a year, that's still like probably not doable.
Yeah.
So you've got this federal debt issue, which the reason the debt is so high is because of the federal rules. So you have to use the federal payment options to pay back the debt that wouldn't be so high if it wasn't for federal rules in mm-hmm. the first place. So that's the first thing is challenging, significant others and parents' line of thinking to that, that there's alternative ways to pay back debt than just brute force it. And, for people who owe more than double their incomes, that's kind of like the unofficial guideline I use. That's when you need to have that conversation with partners like, hey, I don't have to pay this giant amount towards my student debt because we're going to use a different strategy for that. In terms of like income, which maybe I'm hearing a little bit in that question, like, maybe you expected to make more money than you're making yes. right now. And you thought that, the admissions people told you that this was going to be an easy ticket to making a great income. and you get out of school and you start working, and then suddenly you find out that it's not, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or it's not at least what you thought it was going to be.
Not as easy.
It's not as easy.
Not as easy, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so the thing that I would say there is, do you earn more than if you worked as a teacher at a school?
Mm-hmm.
You know, most people will say yes to that. I mean, there are some extreme examples where people will still be struggling to find a job or make an income. So if you're making more money than a, you know, teacher at a school or a janitor or somebody like that, like, view that as a win, that you're earning a decent living more than the majority of people out there in the country at large, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's all about savings, right, and how much you spend.
Yes.
So if you make $60,000 a year, but you save 50% of your income, you're going to be a lot wealthier than the physician that makes $150,000 or $200,000 a year, but has a 10% savings rate.
You got it.
So that's, you know, I've worked with people that are on track to be multimillionaires that barely make $50,000 a year, and it's just because they have rock bottom expenses and they're very modest with their budgets.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I think that for that spending, like the expectation of you contributing, I think that's a conversation that happens in a lot of couples, like, mm-hmm. that you don't, you know, variety of reasons. So I guess I would just say, if you're concerned that you're not contributing enough, maybe first have that money conversation in general with your spouse, like, mm-hmm. what are our goals, like, what, how much we want going to savings versus spending and all that. And then if you're, you know, I mean, hopefully you have somebody that's understanding, then we'll work with you and everything, but mm-hmm. just make sure that your savings rate is high and that you're living as if you, you know, are a couple notches down the, you know, socioeconomic, like, prestige ladder, if that makes
yes.
sense.
Yeah. So let's get into the planning part. So you've touched on it quite a bit about how to create that great financial plan. Obviously, keeping your expenses as low as possible. I completely agree. Like, you should not be having a frivolous lifestyle for the first couple of years. Like, I'm not too shameful to say I lived with my parents for the first 3 years of my business. And I refused to move out of my parents' house unless I was living with somebody else. Like, I wasn't going to try to be some, like, big fancy adult and have my own space because I was an adult. I was like, forget it. I'm not throwing money away just for rent so I can say I live in my own apartment. I was so fine living at my parents' place until I met my now husband and we bought a house together and split all of the costs. So what are some easy techniques that people could start to really implement today? And I try to have as much tangible action steps as we can with these shows that they can start to, like, put their money into proper boxes and make sure that they're following a realistic plan. And perhaps you have, like you mentioned, you know, if you're saving 50% or even 20%, you know, that's putting you at a much better advantage than if you're blowing all your money except for like 5% every year. So I know that was a really long question, but could you kind of start breaking down a great payment plan?
Yeah, well, I'll do it for the folks that have a lot of student debt on the American federal system, because that's what I really deal with the most. So say you've got more than $100,000 of student loans, you know, what do you do? What is your first step? So the first thing is, I would want you to be either on the pay-as-you-earn program or the revised pay-as-you-earn program. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be one of those two. And if you're on something else, there's a really solid chance that you're costing yourself tens of thousands of dollars a year. You know, if you have a lot of debt, at least thousands. So it really does need to be one of those two plans. The other thing is, should you be filing your taxes together as a married couple or separately? So I see a big problem with this. People, it's just funny. Like, every time I look at one, usually people are making a mistake the way they do it. So if you file your taxes separately as a couple, then there needs to be a really clear reason why you're doing that to limit your student loan payment. So you're doing pay-as-you-earn or revised pay-as-you-earn, and that's just going to have that's going to cause 10% of your income to go towards your student loans. So that's going to limit your payment, but the loans are going to keep growing, and you're going to see the debt balloon, and it's going to cause a psychological impact on you. And you're going to see that debt, and you're going to think, oh my gosh, this thing keeps growing and growing. What do I do?
Mm-hmm.
And I model this for folks that I work with, but we can know, like, what that debt amount is going to be in 20 to 25 years. Like, we can kind of project it out and figure out what that is.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're going to have this big debt amount. So for most naturopaths, you know, you're working for yourself, or you're not going to be working at a not-for-profit institution. So you might have a hard time qualifying for the best American program, which is that public service loan forgiveness program. So that's like 10 years you pay on these programs and then you have no tax liability. That's not most people. Mm-hmm. So most naturopaths have to pay for 20 to 25 years. And then so you're watching that debt balance grow. It's really big. And then at the end of it, you have to basically pay taxes on that forgiven balance as if it was a bonus.
Right.
So that's going to be a big amount of money in the future. And so to protect against that, you have to put away a certain amount of money every month.
Got it.
Yeah. So then the question is like, what is that amount of money? Mm-hmm. Where should it go? You know, and then also the last final piece of it is when you're doing so much savings, you've got to figure out you've got to try to figure out ways to reduce your income and also grow your wealth.
Yes.
So a lot of people, you know, don't put anything into retirement savings. Like that's such a common problem with naturopaths and other folks. You know, it's like, oh, I'm going to retire when I'm dead. Like that's my plan. You know,
I'm just planning on staying on my parents' will. That's our joke. I'm like, I just don't want to get off the will. Like,
yeah, be nice to mom, be nice to grandma, right? The cool thing is you can actually take charge of your own future and not have to rely on that. And so with some of that 50% savings rate or even 20% savings rate, you'd want to make it a goal to put as much into retirement as you possibly can. Mm-hmm. And for most people, the pre-tax, before-tax retirement plans are better because if you have student loans, because that simultaneously saves you money up front and it saves you money with having a lower student loan payment.
Okay.
So it's kind of a threefold thing. You make sure you're on the right plan for your student loans. That's going to save you money. Then you're going to make sure you got the right amount of money going into the right account for that tax bomb, mm-hmm. so that you don't have to freak out about it anymore. Mm-hmm. It's like it's a knowable, defined thing that you're preparing for.
Yeah.
And then that third thing is saving for retirement, to make sure you have a secure future and you're optimizing your loans with lower payments. And then any extra, you know, go blow it on, you know, having fun and, you know, going to, you know, see Taylor Swift or Lorde or somebody like that.
I'm assuming that those are your faves. That's why they came to you so quickly.
My wife's taking me to see Lorde, and it's there's a toss up as to whether or not we're going to go to the Taylor Swift concert next month. So.
Well, I would like to go.
Yeah.
So the next question that's coming up to me is discipline. So I'm sure people are listening and they're like, yeah, I know I'm supposed to be doing this, but it's really hard for me to allocate my money or even know where to start. So while you're saying, you know, these are the logical things that you should do, what are my next steps? Are there like softwares or apps that you've given to your clients to say, here's how you can really manage what, you know, the money that came in this month, where it should allocate, or what would you recommend?
Yeah, I mean, we have a CFP on staff if people have very sort of severe budget issues. Mm-hmm. We actually have a separate like budget consult thing. And what he does is uses Mint.com and we Mint.com.
Okay.
Mint.com. And it's just a financial tracking software. It's free.
Okay.
And you can upload all of your account information, your credit cards, your bank accounts, and you can see what you're spending money on. That's the first step, is mm-hmm. to know where it's all going. And one of the tools that we use is and if it's like a couple, for example, we'll have people rank their top five spending areas in terms mm-hmm. of importance to them.
So
we'll say, okay, maybe you have a family and it's housing, daycare, you know, car transportation, travel and eating out or food, right? And so we'll have you rank those five big categories, and then you know, and then we want both people to kind of agree on their list.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So that might be a discussion. And so then once you've got your list, then you go through everything. And for the number one and the number two most important categories where all your money is going, we're going to probably suggest you keep most or all of that spending. We might have some slight cuts in number three.
Mm-hmm.
And then number four and five are where our most extreme cuts will happen. And that's intentional because – you know, maybe your Zumba class is the most important thing to you in your life.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's the one thing that keeps you sane at the end of the week, right? And maybe that cannot go, right? But then you look at your spending and you're like, wow, like I didn't even remember that I like went to, you know, that Brazilian steakhouse with people from you know, work. And like, mm-hmm. I don't even remember that experience. That's a great signal that that's something that could go.
Yes.
Or that's something that could get cut back, right? So then, you know, with like Mint.com, you can have categories, you know, that you kind of cap yourself at, and mm-hmm. then they'll alert you if you're going over that category. So,
awesome.
Yeah, so that's what we will typically do, is just to make sure that the cuts are coming out of areas in your life where, you know, you don't find value in where the money's going.
Got it. So the other thing that's kind of coming to my mind is, you know, a lot of people, in order to keep their spending down, will use like the old mason jar method, where they keep cash in a jar and try to limit how much they spend on their credit cards and things like that. Do you find that all like those techniques as well can be helpful? Yeah.
Well, it really does. I would highly suggest that path if somebody's got a problem with going out to eat or like spending mm-hmm. too much money on groceries mm-hmm. or, you know, kind of those impulse purchases. Spending only in cash is a very powerful way to cut your spending, but that won't address something like, you know, a rental payment or a car payment, right? And really, probably in maybe 75% of cases when people are having budget problems, it's usually one of those two. It's usually
rent,
housing.
And
it's usually housing or cars, because you can, like, I like to make this joke, you can go to Starbucks until your liver fails. It's not going to, you know, cause you to have a problem with your credit card spending relative to living in a one bedroom, you know, loft apartment, mm-hmm. like when you could be splitting it with a bunch of roommates.
Right.
Like just the small, like $5 or $10 purchases, yes, they do add up. Like, I'm not saying they don't. But I really find that most people can save the most money by like compromising on their living situation and then their vehicles.
Yes. Yeah. And I can attest to that. I mean, my husband and I, we live in a, you know, 3-bedroom condo townhouse, and my husband hates that we pay condo fees. But it was a really like low mortgage. Like, we could be out of mortgage if we really wanted to in 7 years. And we've looked at other houses and we're like, yeah, sure, we could easily move to a larger house and we'll be paying our mortgage until we're like 20 years from now. But we don't have to. And I've really like, we've had a lot of conversations and a lot of tears about that too on my end, being like, honey, I just don't need us to be financially strained. Like, we just don't need to have that. We're not impressing anybody by doing that. And same with cars. Like, we drive very modest vehicles because we want to have a life, right? We want to not be stressed out about finances and have savings in the bank. And it's amazing how we look at our friends even and how much they're in the $400,000, $500,000 homes and they have 2 kids. And I'm just like, well, that means your property taxes are higher, your costs to run the house are higher, you have to pay for all of the fixing and the outdoor stuff. Like, you know, sometimes you just don't have to do that despite, and my mom's a realtor and she's like, well, other people are doing it. I was like, well, they don't have to pay our bills. You know, like, it's so easy to be persuaded by the stereotypical like lifestyle that you should have. But I would just as much live in a tiny home. Like, I tell my husband, that's our retirement plan, is we're moving into like one of those truck bed tiny homes. Like, that is our plan.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think it's about efficiency. So mm-hmm. if you're going to have, you know, a lot of times, like, why do you want to have a big house in the first place? Well, you might say, well, I want all the family to be able to stay at my house when they come visit, or I want to be able to have good parties and not have people feel cramped, or, mm-hmm. You know, why do you want to drive a big truck? Well, I want to feel safe that when I, you know, drive, you know, in the winter, whenever there's a bad day, like I'm high up the ground and I'm, you know, I can go off road or something like that. And mm-hmm. usually there's like a deeper psychological issue behind mm-hmm. that. It's mostly like the things that make you happy are being with family or, you know, going on those trips where you would need to have a truck or something mm-hmm. like that. Or like, that's the real thing that motivates the spending and the desire. And marketers are really smart about that. And like, industries that make tons of profits off of that mm-hmm. feeling really know this. And so they elicit all these feelings in you to want those things. And so, you know, instead of buying that big house, you know, what if you bought a very small house and then you spent a percentage of the difference in the price on entertaining your friends, right? Or renting like an Airbnb, like for your family when they come visit, you know, or like my wife and I, we have this really nice IKEA sleeper couch, and when people come visit us, like, we transform it into kind of like almost like a little bedroom, and we have our guests sleep in our room, you know?
Yeah.
So it's all about, don't take that easy way out that mm-hmm. like TV and marketing and all these different things tell you that you're supposed to take. Like, take the efficient way out by doing some of the stuff that, you know, that you're talking about. Like, what's the best school district that I can get into for mm-hmm. the money? You know, what's the smallest space that I can be in and, you know, not feel like it's a big pain in my life? What's the minimum amount of car that I need to feel safe on the road?
Mm-hmm.
You know, we just had that problem. So, like, we probably bought too cheap of a car. You know, we bought like a 2004 Honda Civic and we drove it for a little while, and my wife felt like it wasn't super safe on the mm-hmm. road. Like, what, you know, kind of didn't have as fast braking as she would like. And so we compromised and we bought a 2012 Nissan Altima in cash. Mm-hmm. And it's great. Like, there's no problems with it, yeah. but it's also kind of old and it's a little dinged up. And, you know, when we get a scratch on it in the city, when we're parking it or somebody like bumps into us, like, we don't have to worry about going and hitting up our insurance company.
Right.
And, you know, cause it's just an old car and it just runs. So it's like getting that minimum level. Like, I'm not saying everybody has to go live in a tiny house, cause, you know, I think that's great. I'd like to do that too. But, you know, I think that you want to get people to that minimum level where they feel like it's okay, and like,
yeah,
kind of capping those spending decisions to whatever that like most efficient level is.
Well, I'd love to finish off this call by talking about this psychological and the deep-rooted thoughts around money and spending and where that comes from. And I was curious if you have any great resources that you've given to your clients to read or follow or listen to with regards to, you know, understanding where those financial perceptions are, understanding where your fear of poverty is, understanding where like your desire to appear wealthy is. You know, a lot of that comes into play around money.
Yeah, that's a great question. I guess the one that I like to go to is the book, The Millionaire Next Door. Mm-hmm. That's one of the ones that I think is fantastic for understanding mindset and understanding what causes certain people to be wealthy and certain people to not have very much money at all.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's a great book. There, you know, I guess, you know, not to sound self-serving, but my blog, studentloanplanner.com, talks a lot about that and talks about different ways that people can get over that hump psychologically of doing all the right things with their money. Mr. Money Mustache is one that encourages people to use, he's actually Canadian, too. And he's mm-hmm. really into like efficient living. And then, there's also something called millennialrevolution.com. Mm-hmm. It's a couple also from Canada that have a very like financial independence, mm-hmm. you know, kind of mindset, that'll really help, with spending issues.
Perfect. So repeat your website one more time.
Sure. Yeah. My site, studentloanplanner.com. If people, I guess, wanted to just contact me, it's just my name, Travis@studentloanplanner.com. And they can just send me an email just about anything. Happy to chat. And yeah, I mean, we just help a lot of naturopaths and other professionals who have over six figures in debt and want to get a plan and know that they're doing the right thing and not have to feel stressed about it anymore. So that's what we do.
Perfect. Well, Travis, thank you so much for coming on the show and talking about, you know, a rather scary issue for a lot of people and bringing to light, you know, it doesn't have to be the forefront of every move that you make, and you do need to, excuse me, and still need to invest in your business because that's why you went to school, but don't outlive your lifestyle, right? Like, be very realistic about your finances and what you're spending. So thank you again so much. And we will put the links to connect with you and your website in our show notes. And I can't think of anything else. Can you think of anything else that we've missed today?
No, I think that's good. Just focus on cutting back your spending, you know, living frugally. And once you're, you know, 3 years into your business or 2 years into your business, and you've had that financial stability, reward yourself a little bit.
Yeah, I always keep the mantra that I am living the life that other people's couldn't imagine to have the life that others would dream of. So in the beginning, yeah. Like, yeah, people are like, oh my God, I can't believe you're doing this. You're working long hours. You're, you know, living at your parents' house still. And then 10 years, they'll be like, oh my God, like, I want to go stay in your, you know, big fancy house and go on your big fancy vacation. So I always keep those little mantras in the back of my mind.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, owning your own business can double your income, like literally. And so think about doubling your income from that regard. And then in terms of the student loan mistakes, like the average person that we work with saves about, like, long-term $70,000, like, mm-hmm. from optimizing their situation, making sure mm-hmm. they're not making mistakes like that. So it's just get a plan, like, know what you're doing, being intentional, go for that practice ownership goal, and you can definitely be successful. And you know, stop blaming yourself. You know, you can have a wonderful path ahead no matter what your situation is.
Cool. Thank you so much, Travis.
Thanks, Andrea.
And there you have it, everyone. Another interview in the books. And I really do hope that you think realistically about your financial situation. And even with my husband and I, we have a budget that has all of our fixed costs, so we know exactly what our bare minimum is every single month. So when we have to pay on top of that, then we can start to question, well, what were our extra expenses this month? And I've done the same thing with my business. So for those of you that know you really need to make a big financial impact and you want to start making some serious dollars in your business, which will help to contribute to your financial debt, I strongly encourage you to contact me, info@themaxmovement.com, and we can set up a time to chat and discuss where in your business things are not going so well and what you could easily implement. And I can tell you that even after one call, I have seen tremendous growth in people's businesses because sometimes we just need permission to do something, like raise our rates or start emailing our patient list every single week instead of once a month, or create a new program. And often once you've given permission to do it, you feel comfortable and you can start doing it freely. And it's just, again, those mental blocks that we create in our own mind, which also get in the way of our success. So contact me, info@themaxmovement.com, and we can set up a call that will work best for you and me, and we'll have a good old-fashioned one-on-one chat. If you do have any questions, comments, or topic ideas, also contact me. Check me out on Instagram @AndreaMaxumND, and please leave a review on iTunes. The more reviews we get, the more this podcast gets shared, and I want all practitioners to know that it is a successful career option and you do not need to be struggling. Again, I'm Andrea Maxim, and I'm out.
You guys are killer. Thank you, as always, for listening to the Profitable Practice Podcast. Leave me a comment, and if you haven't already, I would love a review in iTunes. Definitely subscribe to this podcast and leave me a quick review. For those ready to maximize your practice, contact me at www.maximizedbusiness.ca.